All right, welcome everybody to this emergency weekend interview following the assassination attempt of our president, Donald J. Trump. This is Mike Adams of Brighteon.com, and I'm joined today by one of my contacts, sources. His code name is High Cap, and I've interviewed him before. He has worked with border operations teams. He's very well experienced in terms of tactical ballistics and security protocols and much more. Welcome to the show today, High Cap. It's great to have you back.
Hey, Mike, it's good to be on. What interesting circumstances that we are set in today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the consensus right now is that, literally Trump dodged a bullet. To graze somebody's ear, to puncture their ear, but yet that person can walk away is so incredibly unusual. Can you just talk about that for a moment in terms of combat and the one in a million, odds of something like this happening?
Well, based on what I saw in the video and what I heard as far as, firing report versus the Secret Service doing their thing as well. I personally, my own opinion, from my experiences, believe that, maybe the first shot was not as rushed, but the follow-up shots absolutely were. And then there, of course, there was a volley from the, from the Secret Service. But, the chances of at that distance, missing a target's pretty interesting as far as not being able to hit a man-sized target, much less shooting at the head. He was extremely lucky to not have been hit where the mark was probably set. Seeing the follow-up pictures where they show actually a bullet path behind his head, I believe that would have been a follow-up. Could have been that the one that went through his ear. That everything just leads to the fact that they haven't said whether or not it was a 223 or 556. They haven't said if it's a 22, which I don't believe it was a 22. I believe it was a probably a 556 or a 223. Based on the gentleman, which was terrible, the gentleman who lost his life had either a face shot, head shot, but they were talking about exposure of brain matter, which I just don't think at that distance a 22 would create that kind of a scenario at the velocities that they normally shoot.
Well, it's being reported that an AR-15 was recovered, and so, you and I can both probably safely assume it's a 16-inch barrel. It's probably a 5.56 round, 62 grain or 55 grain, right?
Right.
Very, very capable of penetrating a human skull and killing somebody on impact.
Right.
But speak to, a lot of people observing this don't have any firearms experience. And I've seen stories out of Bild, Germany, where they say, well, the wind blew the bullet off course. And, it's absurd given that short distance. Talk to us about, why this is actually a very short range for, any kind of an experienced shooter, and why wind was not a factor here.
Yeah, you're looking at just an average at that distance that we're talking. You're talking a muzzle velocity, the most common grain weight, 5.56 or 223 bullets, 55 grain, or just go off of that alone, which we don't know all the animals. We're just using a swag. The drop is anywhere from, 1.5, maybe, 2.3-ish at 100 yards. That's not much of a drop at all, which is averagely around 1.5 inches. And the wind pushing that bullet would be extremely, you'd have to have an extremely high wind, in which they did not.
Right.
And So you would not see a little to no wind shift at that distance, based on what I observed through the video that was being shown, looking at, you know, flags and posters people were having. They weren't having a hard time holding them up. There just wasn't a lot of wind. So
right. And confirm if you would, that if you and I were out target shooting steel plates, let's say at 150 yards, which is a little bit farther than what this was, we wouldn't even bother for wind compensation at that range, right?
No, that's correct.
Yeah. And I actually calculated the flight time of that round based on a 2,500 feet per second muzzle velocity. Flight time is 0.167 seconds. So there's no time for wind to affect it. And also, as you well know, the wind would have to be a crosswind, you know, not a 12 o'clock or a 6 o'clock wind.
No, it'd have to be a direct crosswind.
Right, that's like a 3 o'clock wind.
Yeah,
and that's correct. So those who are saying that wind caused the mist, you know, I don't think they understand marksmanship at all. But
no, I agree with you. And I think he got up on top of that roof and then realized his vulnerability being up there and panicked, rushed, shot. And because, I mean, it was pretty ridiculous, the whole scenario.
Yeah. Talk to us about that. Just the fact that roof could be left open and exposed. I mean, you have a lot of experience with security. How big of a lapse was that?
That was a huge, huge mistake. You know, working with 18 Bravos in a SF unit. You know, been in that unit for almost 10 years, and there's no way that you would allow that footprint to be so small when you have, you don't have a lot of things around that area. So why would you not cover them all? And on top of that, you had interview after interview of people saying they walked up to police officers, said, "Hey, there's a dude climbing up on the roof." Whether that dude had any intention of harm or not, you would have investigated it immediately.
Yes.
Like, you would have ran to find out where this was at. And to not have reacted to that was a failure on many levels. But having that opportunity for him to be able to climb up on top of that building was absolutely ridiculous in itself. You know, as far as I have some friends that are in the Secret Service, and I have high respect for a lot of them, but they're also human too. I've watched some of them during training, like, not even want to lay down and get dirty. So, yeah, you know, you have all kinds and stuff, and I'm not, you know, taking a punch at the Secret Service. I really not, but it is, you know, there's always those in amongst the group, but there's no excuse for the availability of people that were there, the tactical units, the law enforcement, to not have covered that possible avenue. And never even made it an option for that to happen.
Yeah. Now, this is, of course, an outdoor event. And in an outdoor event, I mean, they had a close-in security perimeter where everybody that was allowed close up had gone through a metal detector.
Sure.
But, I mean, again, you have a lot of experience with security. Every security person knows that there's also always the possibility of rifle fire from outside 100 yards plus.
Well, that's what you're looking. Anything outside that perimeter that I could see, I don't have their pace plan. I don't have their risk assessment form. I don't have, you know, their operational planning and you know, their backup plans, for that matter. I don't have that information in front of me. So obviously, I'm just taking a swag on what I would have done and how I would have reacted. So taking that into account, from what I see operationally that happened in the videos that have been posted, and from people who are close by to President Trump and that I communicate with and others, that, you know, it was a small bubble and they were not taken into account. Well, they were not allowed to, or they were not taking into account purposefully or unpurposefully. That's a nice word. That further out distance for security, you know? And why is the question? There is the question. Why was that not done?
Okay,
and,
so let me ask you this. What distance would normally be considered for a president in an outdoor event? Like, if you were running that security, what range would you be concerned out to?
I would have, you know, local law enforcement, you know, doing patrol and guidance of crowds and such, and you know, human control measures as far as people and stuff. And then I would have my tactical units definitely, you know, high up on every point available, have some sort of tactical observation going on that they could see further out. But that would be a minimum of a 300-yard perimeter as a medium line, and then a further maybe just observation out to 500 yards, you know, to be able to see if anybody's out, because, you know, there are people out there that are capable of shooting in 500 yards very, very reasonably.
Yes. So this security perimeter, I mean, this shooter was less than.
Yeah, he was
less than half of the medium range that you just mentioned.
Yep. Yeah, he walked up there, got up on the building. People watched him do it. You know, I believe that he knew that he would not, you know, he had already come to grips with what his outcome would be. And his intent was to do exactly what it was. Now, you know, there's speculation that he was, you know, who he's tied to and all of those things, but I'm definitely waiting to hear some inside reporting intel wise on some of that, just out of curiosity myself through my groups. But
yeah, but that there's obviously everybody's involved in a lot of investigation right now on that.
Sure.
And it is too early to reach conclusions about that.
Absolutely.
But let me ask you now about the Secret Service response. There's been a lot of criticism today from across Twitter and, you know, former Secret Service like Dan Bongino, who is ripping the Secret Service today, calling for resignations. And there's one particular video, I don't know if you've seen it, but it was a female Secret Service agent who was left-handed, you know, her left-handed pistol, who struggled for seemingly 10 seconds to try to reholster her weapon. Could not holster it. And in the middle of the scramble to try to load Trump into a vehicle. And any of us watching that are just, you know, horrified at the lack of muscle memory. What's your reaction to something like that? I mean, have you ever seen a Secret Service agent who could not holster their weapon?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I just saw one recently.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you know, you have to throw into the fact, you know, just to be fair, to be the devil's advocate here, I hate using that term. Everything is happening, and your primary client, you know, the president of the United States, just gets nicked by a bullet. You don't know if he's even shot in the head. He just doesn't even know what happened yet. Let's just say it could have been a 22, it could have gone in his head, and he would not necessarily have dropped. He might even still have functionality. But, you know, you just saw that you have your president, who you're supposed to be protecting, is got blood on his head, and he is going down. And you know, your training should be to the lowest level of muscle memory training, which means you need to train high in those levels to keep them you know, as a primal reaction. And you can see multiple people in that scene that were not responding in that manner, like as if they are either newer or they're not getting, you know, they've been somewhere else where they're not training that. So yeah, there was a lot of failure in response mentality, but you know, given the circumstance of the things going on, I'm not making excuses for them. I'm just speaking the reality of what is happening. Even up on top of the roof, the sniper set up that engaged the guy was like, he looked and then he got on his gun and shot. And I was like, wow, You know, I would not have even been leaving my scope. I'd be scanning constantly the area, and my spotter would be doing the same, and we'd be looking at people individually, how their personality is, what are they doing. And as soon as I pop, I'm looking for my spotter to you know, back me up and push me in the direction I need to trigger, right?
Right.
Yeah, he stopped, looked up, and then immediately got on the gun and shot. Thank goodness, you know, that part of his reaction was very good, and he was able to, you know, to engage that. Which, you know, I haven't heard the distance from where he shot to the shooter himself, but
it was a little bit less than the distance between Trump and the shooter.
Yeah, it was like it was a no-brainer. It should have been, you know, what we call a recce shot, which is, you know, a rapid engagement type shooting. He should be very confident in that. And guess what? He was. He pulled it out of the hat.
But there's something I have to ask you. You're talking about the sniper that had the tripod set up, right?
That's correct.
There was, from one angle, there was a moment where he seemed to reset his rifle. Like he almost pulled the rifle up and set it back down. And that's not recoil from the shot, because recoil from the shot does not lift your rifle up like that.
No, it does not.
So, do you have any idea? Are you familiar with what I'm describing? Do you remember seeing that?
Yeah, and it looks like to me like he actually, you know, like pulled back or hit his tripod as he was trying to re-engage, you know, trying to get up on his scope better. And I'd have to look back at it again, but yeah, I agree that there was definitely an odd scenario there.
Yeah, I found it strange. A lot of people thought that was recoil, but I'm trying to tell them, no, recoil pushes back. I mean, you know, number one, he's on a tripod. If he knows what he's doing, he's got his shoulder pressed against the buttstock. Mm-hmm. And he's highly experienced. He knows how to absorb recoil and stay on target for a follow-up shot, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I will be looking back at that a little harder on that video to see more on that. It just looked like he was caught off guard, and literally, and of course they were not looking in the direction that things were going. Think about this: move, shoot, communicate, medicate. All right. That's what you have, the key things you have to have in place in your security element. They need to be able to talk to each other. And that includes law enforcement on the ground needs to be on monitoring a channel that the Secret Service can relay that information. So why was an officer not on his radio calling in that there's a gentleman on top of the roof at such and such building, direction from the president at 3 o'clock, you know, whatever. I mean, that would be instantaneous. And if I'm on my earpiece and I'm hearing this and I'm on a sniper rifle, I mean, it would be, you know, immediately shift in direction, right?
Yeah, you would think, but that brings up the question about whether rules of engagement. Do you think these, like that, the sniper on top, the counter sniper on the barn roof, do you think he was given rules of engagement to engage at his own discretion? Or do you think that he would have to call it in and get permission?
He would not have to call it in and get permission. He would be able to engage. If a gentleman was on top of the roof and he had a fire on that right there gives you your ROE. So.
Okay, and you're pretty confident that there's no way that some nefarious person at the top of Secret Service may have altered the rules of engagement?
If they did, there's your answer, right? If he comes back and says, I got word not to shoot until authorized, well, there's your answer. That was that's a nefarious act, because that is their job, is to observe any element that they find to be a threat and have the permission already to use lethal force, up to lethal force.
Okay, so let me ask you this question, and I don't mean to be splitting hairs here, but you have a lot of experience. I just want your take. So this shooter crawled up the backside of a sloped roof, and if he peered over that roof, just showing his head at first, but not yet a rifle, because he could have, you know, he could have easily sort of kept the rifle by his side until the very last minute. How suspicious would that have been to have like a guy on a roof looking over the edge of the roof, but you don't see a weapon at that point yet?
Yeah. Where's his lawn chair, right? where's his folding lawn chair to kick back with his cooler to watch the event, you know, even on a set of binos. Yeah, that would immediately, you know, garner a reaction, a security threat reaction. And, you know, my understanding is so far that, you know, it wasn't presented that way. He literally was up higher, standing or kneeling or whatever, with the rifle placed into his shoulder and shooting. So he was able to be seen from where other Secret Service were set, you know, in a tactical position to observe, you know, from a higher up position themselves.
I see. Okay. All right. So in the aftermath of this, what do you think is going to be different about the way Trump holds rallies or the way Secret Service covers them?
I think Trump's going to put his foot down for one, because you saw his demeanor when he was leaving. He was in shock. He was, and he was mad. You know, he was upset, and it, you know, you saw him put his fist up and holler fight. So I believe that he will. Matter of fact, I heard, and I don't know if this is true, this is just hearsay, that he went to the UFC fighting thing that night. Now, whether or not that truly happened or not, that would be pretty amazing. So I believe he's going to not allow his campaign to be halted or shortened because of this mentality.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I agree with that assessment. But what about outdoor events? You know, if this were indoors, it's a far more controlled environment. Do you think that he might avoid outdoor events or just have much better security at such events?
I think he'll either pay for his own added security out of his own pocket, or if they're not going to give it to him by the government, which is a conflict, right? You know, who's in charge, the paid security or the assigned Secret Service? You know, there's going to be a change. He'll make sure of it. He'll put his foot down for that. I think there will be some people who are going to be let go. And I believe that there's going to be repercussions for this across the board. I believe that this gentleman's going to open up a can of worms that either was set in play on purpose as a sacrificial lamb, or they'll, you know, start to find things that are going to, you know, most likely they're going to push it as a lone wolf scenario. So I don't think he's going to stop his outdoor events. I really don't. But I think he'll take into measure that he will make sure that people check, you know, his security element and the distance and how they operate that in the future, for sure.
And I would think also that the crowd that attends Trump's events, you know, number one, they're not going to be dissuaded by this. I think if anything, his rallies are going to get larger, but the crowd's going to be, you know, working for security. In essence, they're going to be looking at everybody, looking at all the buildings, all the trees, all the windows, all the vehicles, right? And calling out anything suspicious, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think it will be, but you know, you're always going to have those ones in the mega mentality that can get overzealous and could actually become a problem, even though they don't mean to be. Their heart's in a good place, but you know, you have some people show up and they're all armed because they're going to be security, whether, you know, Trump security likes it or not. That could be a problem. That's a conflict. Now you've got, you know, and I'm not, I'm just, you know, spitballing here, you know, what could happen. And so that could get interesting, which leaves an open window for somebody nefarious to fall into a group like that.
Yeah.
And we've seen that over and over and over again. The Republican side, MAGA, right wing, whatever you want to call it, being infiltrated by nefarious actors, including governmental actors or agency actors that have been blatantly put out there. That's not conspiracy. That's been fact proven.
Yes.
To instigate or escalate people's mentalities to stir up the pot. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon because we're headed into the election.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we're almost out of time here, but I want to ask you a couple more questions about things that Trump's security team should watch out for. In other words, the way snipers, if, you know, a typical sniper, let's say in a military setting, as you know very well, a sniper is not typically going to crawl onto a roof fully exposed. They're going to sit inside a room, back away from the window, right, in a dark room, and they're going to have a narrow field of view of where their target's going to show up. No one's going to see them. I mean, and this can be done from a van as well. Aren't there many other far more covert type of sniping positions that could be deployed against Trump in the future?
Well, sure there is. There can be everything. I mean, I'm not trying to put too many ideas in people's heads out there, but yeah, there's always something different. This, you know, this guy, for example, that did this, he had a direct line intent and he didn't care for the repercussions. It was blatant in his motivation and the way he approached things was either directly stupidity or he didn't care. And he was going to do what he was going to do. And therefore, he knew what could happen. So if you take that into account, I mean, anybody could be attacked. You know, I have clients ask me all the time, you know, what is my, you know, because they know me and I'll be honest with them about it. It's like, you know, hey, what is, you know, the chance, what is our risk management of my getting harmed in this arena? Well, if we're outside and we have, you know, 50 people to protect you, we can mitigate that pretty good. But if we're outside and we have 15 people to protect you, it's going to be a whole lot lower. You know, so yeah, there's all kinds of ways that somebody can engage a target, no matter who it is, you know, this scenario that just happened or any other scenario would be planned out days ahead, and you would already have things in place and ready to go for that event. You know, you would already be prepared. And now we're talking about AI and drones and all of that. I mean, I watched videos of soldiers in another conflict right now, just the other day, walking along in a first person drone, high speed drone with explosives on it, came in out of nowhere and hit one of the soldiers square on. There was nothing to stop that. It's so fast.
Yeah.
That you can't stop it, you know, and even if you had, anti-drone capability, it would be very difficult and it, you know, it did its job. It was like getting hit with a grenade.
But yeah, so. it makes me wonder if, because of drones, if outdoor events like this are going to be history soon, because the drone threat, especially high speed kamikaze drones like we've seen deployed in, you know, Ukraine a lot, they can be quite deadly. It doesn't take a very big explosive charge either.
No, it does not. What you're going to start seeing is a stadium, a podium that has a roof on it, and it probably has a netting drop, like a mesh netting drop, that will come down to where it will interfere with anything coming in, like a drone or anything like that. So to use a small something like, or even bullets, like somebody firing something, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to stop it, but it could deflect it enough to not serve its purpose. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, HICAP, I want to thank you for spending time with us here today and providing some, you know, expert analysis here. We appreciate your time. And I think right now we have to thank the Lord that Trump is safe, because it pains me to think of where we would be today if Trump had been assassinated. I think this country would have erupted quite violently. I'm glad that did not happen.
There is a pathway that's being laid before us all by the Lord, and Trump's was to survive that and be able to continue to fight. So yes, I am glad and thankful that the Lord looks after us all that reach to him and, you know, accept, our responsibility and the path we work to be good, lovers of Jesus Christ. I'm not trying to say religious or Christian. I'm just saying lovers of Jesus Christ and wanting to be with the Father. So that is the most important thing.
Well, thank you. God bless you, HICAP, for all your efforts. And, if you notice anything else you think we need to know, keep me posted. I'll pass it along to the audience.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Mike. And it's always a pleasure to speak with you and catch up.
All right. You as well. Thank you so much. Safe journeys.
Take care.
Take care.
Yes, sir. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. The hurricane that recently blew through Texas caused over 2 million people to lose power in the Houston area. And more people have lost power, throughout Texas and other states as well as this has moved through. Our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, has a sister site called BeReady123.com. If you go there, you'll find that they've got power solutions, backup power systems right here. They've got solar generators. They've got storage systems. They've got a survival go bag on top of that and many other items. Plus, of course, you can get satellite phones and backup communication devices from them. They've made them all affordable with a monthly payment instead of having to buy everything up front with the phones. But if you go there, BeReady123.com, you'll find these systems that I use as backup power systems. And right now, the power grid is less reliable than ever before. It seems like we're suffering more kind of storms or, outages or just cyber attacks on the power grid from time to time. It's always important to have a backup system. These solar generators, you can charge them from the sun. Obviously, they have built-in charge controllers and inverters. You can run small refrigerators off of these if you want to, or even blenders. You can recharge computers or mobile phones or batteries for flashlights or even night vision devices. So this is a really important technology area to make sure that you have squared away for your own personal preparedness and survival planning. Again, just check out the website, BeReady123.com, or you can go to the Satellite Phone Store if you just want the comms equipment, and that's at SAT123.com. And thank you for supporting our sponsors.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.